This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, our good friend, Hall of Fame guest on this fine program, from the PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, to discuss the firing of Peter Laviolette and the hiring of Craig Berube. Anthony Sanfilippo is going to join us. 7:30 p.m. tonight, around 90 minutes from now, we're going to be joined by the assistant general manager of the San Jose Sharks. Joe Will is going to join us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Well, pleased to welcome Joe for the first time to this program. He's been with that Sharks organization since the outset. So this is a guy who's been around that organization, and it's been a very successful organization for really much of the last 15 years.
It has, and the point of having him on is, and he doesn't do many media interviews, the point is to kind of delve deep into how organizations work, and that's the point of one of the points of this show is NHL Midweek, is to be able to kind of give fans and listeners a different perspective into the hockey world. You know, we cover all the news and we'll cover the Jet stuff, but also how do organizations work? How do specific organizations work? And how do you manage the cap? And what about this decision? And what's the mindset behind that? What's the business aspect behind that? We want to find that stuff out. We want to help the listener find that stuff out, which is, you know, why we're having guys on like him and why we had last year at Brad Treliving. And Frank Provenzano, the former assistant general manager in Dallas, and many other management types.
That sultry sounds of Richard Pollock right there with that explanation. And we also say good evening to the one, the only, very sharply dressed. That's a nice shirt you got on there, Ezzy. Ezzy Ginsberg.
Appreciate it, Drew. Yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to talk some hockey here on another Wednesday night.
With two Red Bulls.
Two Red Bulls and a lack of sleep, I think.
Well, good thing you have two Red Bulls with the lack of sleep. Because you had no lack of sleep and you had two Red Bulls, we'd be in trouble.
Exactly. Let's get started. To start by previewing tomorrow night's Jets Wild game. Going to take place, of course, in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Game you can hear on TSN 1290 tomorrow night. Charlie Coyle, he's out for the Wild. He's out 3 to 4 weeks. Nicholas Backstrom, he goes down with an injury in last mm-hmm. night's game. By the sounds of it, he's not going to play tomorrow night. You know, are the Minnesota Wild a team ripe for the picking right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think with those injuries, Coyle's a big part of their team, and you know, when you get rid of veteran players like they did, Matt Cullen going to Nashville, Setoguchi coming to Winnipeg, you expect your young players to set up, but by all accounts, Coyle had a tremendous training camp and a good exhibition season, so good things were expected of him. He's a talented player, expected to play a second-line role. He gets injured. He's out for about a month. And Michael Granlund's kind of taking his spot, another really, really talented young player. But the injury to the goaltender, a young defense, a young team overall, a lot of talent there, Drew, and I like that squad. But yeah, tomorrow night might be a good night for the Jets, rested, going in there and on a road game with their starting netminder against the other team's, likely the other team's backup. You know, you'll take that.
If you look at the two teams, and when we did this on Saturday previewing the Anaheim game, we thought that the Jets' speed would be a problem for the Ducks. Little did we know that the Jets just wouldn't show up for that Sunday game. Mm-hmm. When you look at these two teams, what area, or is there an area that you think the Jets can sort of exploit on the Minnesota Wild?
Well, the Wild team can skate and can move the puck, so I think you're going to see a fast game tomorrow. What you like to expose, though, is the Wild's defense. You say maybe some size and lack of depth and some youth. So, you know, I think you want to... The number one line on the Jets has put points on the board, but I don't think they've played particularly well. And so this might be the right night to get them off. Now, if you have Suter matched up again, we always talk about the matchups. If you have Suter and Brodin, or however they're going to form... You know, Suter's the best defenseman on the team and arguably top three in the league. He'll be up against the top line. Then Evander Kane's line with Scheifele and Setoguchi, if that's how they throw them out, which we anticipate, has an ability to take advantage of those bottom four Minnesota Wild players, defensemen.
Ezzy, do you get the impression, listening to the different media reports and the interviews over the last couple of days, that this is a Winnipeg Jets team that is somewhat angry at their performance from Sunday night?
They should be. They didn't play well on Sunday, and they probably don't deserve to be 2-1 right mm-hmm. now. And they've had trouble with fundamental areas in hockey. And if they're not mad, then I would be shocked. Listening to the Jets' audio at the Iceplex, you can tell that they're not happy with the way that they've played, not just on Sunday, but in the first three games. And how many guys do you need to say that Pavlik... How many players need to say that Pavlik stole those games? Because he was the first star in all three of those games. Mm-hmm. And it's not a lack of effort by Pavlik, but the Jets have not played a complete game. And it's all about commitment to defense this year. And we haven't seen that. And, you know, there's got to be a concern in Winnipeg that you're not getting efforts out of players who mm-hmm. really are the ones that need to buy in. And, you know, a lot has been made out of Zach Bogosian's giveaway. That was just a small part of the problem. The Jets couldn't even break out of their own zone, and Anaheim was completely dominant in that period. And so this game is important not only because of the poor effort on Sunday, but because this is the first game against a team that they're going to have to mm-hmm. beat on a regular basis in order to get into the playoffs. This is a wild team that is by no means a top team in the Western Conference. So this is important, you know, and it's something that I'll be looking for is the effort level that the Jets put out, because, you know, you can have two wins in your first three games, but they weren't two clean wins and they weren't convincing wins.
Yeah, another thing and I agree with Ezzy on all those points. When you're playing these division matchups now, Dallas after Minnesota, teams are going to be in here all the time. You're going to get very familiar with them, and you're going to have to – those games are very important because you get to the crossover, a lot of teams get into play there. If you can ideally get into one of those top three slots, you don't have to worry so much about the crossover. Minnesota is very good in the faceoff circle as well, and obviously that's been a sore point mentioned in the Free Press, I think, this morning. You know, Koivu, Brodziak. Brodziak's a nice underrated player there, by the way. A guy who can move, who can do a lot of good things. You know, he's not going to be he's not the most talented player, but he tries hard and is willing to engage in all aspects of the game. So, you know, a kind of guy the Jets really could use. And then Zenon Konopka is more of your enforcer type, but he's very good in the circle. So the Jets do have to be aware of that because they're not that strong up the middle, both talent-wise, I think, and face-off-wise.
Sure, that was an area of focus.
Yeah, and so that's another thing in terms of Minnesota, but you could go back on all the matchups. Minnesota is a team that's very well coached. You know, for a young team, they're pretty disciplined for the most part, right? Like some young teams are kind of running all over the place, like Edmonton, for example, although Aikens is trying to change that. Minnesota, now that they have the high-end talent that Edmonton does on the forward group, they do have a lot of high-end talent. You could argue, you know, nobody's really near Edmonton there, but for a young team with talent, and we mentioned Coyle, we mentioned Granlund, you know, obviously you have your top line, Parise and Palmaville and Koivu, and the other players that they have, Brodin, they do play a pretty disciplined style under Mike Yeo, and you have to give him credit, coming from the Pittsburgh organization. He's instilled a defensive conscience in them, and that's helpful because Nicholas Backstrom, when healthy, is not as good as he was 5 years ago.
Sure, he's up there, getting up there in age. Mm-hmm. This is probably his last contract in the NHL, aside from one-year deals, you would think.
I agree with that.
Yeah, everything else will be one-year deals after. Would he sign a three-year deal this offseason?
I thought it was two.
Okay, right. You very well could be right, so don't quote me on that, but we'll double-check on that one. Talking about goaltenders, I mean, we said Backstrom's out. He got injured in that game against Nashville last night, mm-hmm. and Jets play 3 and 4 nights. Which game do you expect to see Al Montoya in?
Well, I expect him probably to play the Dallas game. But it would have to be one of these two games, and the reason why I think it would be the Dallas game, because I think that Minnesota, I don't know if you'd say they're the better team, but I think that it would be harder to put Montoya in a situation where he starts the season on the road, and I think you'd go back to Pavlik on the Sunday against New Jersey. But I think it's a good opportunity because Pavlik has only played 3 games, and you know he's mm-hmm. not by any means tired, but you get Montoya in the fifth game. So I'm thinking the Dallas game. There hasn't been any confirmation from that. I think a lot of the local media have been, you know, trying to get something out of Claude Noel, and he's kind of hinted that he'll try to use Montoya in these back-to-back games. But my bet would be probably Dallas, Drew.
I would agree with that. And by the way, Backstrom signed for 3 years. You were right, Drew, at 3.41 per year. Dallas, it's second half of a back-to-back. You throw Pavlik in there. He's been off for a little bit. You want to get Montoya. Now, I don't think so much for the Pavlik rest factor, because Pavlik's not going to be tired now, early in the season, even three games or four nights. But it's for resting him later on a little bit, having that, you know, the longevity of the season, because he's going to play 65-plus games. I think even more so, it's just getting Montoya involved in playing, because when you're a backup, you don't want your backup to sit there for 10 to 12 games. He needs to get in the flow. You know, it's kind of like if you watch baseball and they'll throw the second, third base, you know, tweener type out for a game on a Sunday after a Saturday night game, just to not only to give him the rest, the starter the rest, but also just to get everybody in the lineup in there.
Sure.
You want to make him feel part of the team. And while obviously you don't want to be counting on Montoya to play big time minutes over the course of the season, you still want him to be buying in and feel like he's a part of the team. And the rest obviously helps too.
And, you know, Drew asked what area the Jets can exploit the Minnesota Wild. This is a Minnesota Wild team that hasn't won a game yet, and this is a team that has line combinations all over the place. Michael Russo wrote an article about it today in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. You've got Jason Zucker, who was sent down to the AHL. You've got Nito Niederreiter, who will probably play on the top line. He's played not bad, even though he's had a very inconsistent first couple years in the NHL. But if anything, you can take advantage of the fact that the lines are all over the place. Stefan Vea, who you'll remember has been with the Wild a bunch of times, kind of a defensive forward, he's in the lineup. We already mentioned that Charlie Coyle is injured, and you know Granlund is struggling. He hasn't really shown anything close to I would say a comfort level. He's still kind of learning the NHL game, really. So I think you could take advantage of that. This is a vulnerable Minnesota team that hasn't got off to the start that they wanted, and you know Josh Harding is a fine backup. I don't think you can just say they can take advantage of him because he's a good goaltender. Obviously not as good as Backstrom, but you have a Wild team that is in flux right now, really.
And Granlund's got his three helpers, but yeah, you know, it's a learning experience. He's a smaller guy, so you know his talent's going to need to win out, but it's tough playing 15, 16 minutes a game against big-time NHL competition. It's not easy, and that transition's difficult. So he's a supremely talented player. Coyle's more, I think, able to handle that physically. Now, granted, he gets injured, but the idea is he's a bigger guy, a little bit more to lean on there, so...
Last question before we go to break. Matt Halaschuk, again, talking about getting sort of the guys on your roster into the game. Would you expect to see Halaschuk? Which game makes more sense for Halaschuk to play if he's going to play one of the three this weekend? Or maybe he's going to play more than the three.
Well, it seems like Thorburn's going to be out because of injury.
Yeah, Thorburn sounds like he's day-to-day with some sort of injury, like you said.
Yeah, some sort of injury. So, I mean, I guess what you're looking at is Halaschuk or Peluso.
Mm-hmm.
Halaschuk, I think, gets in for the Dallas game. For sure. I would throw him in over Peluso. I just think he's a better player. So you want to have more skill in the lineup. I don't think either of Minnesota or Dallas is going to be Toronto or Ottawa in terms of physicality. So I would play Halaschuk in both, but I think he'll draw in for at least Dallas.
When you look at how the Jets have had struggles in their own zone and they've had trouble with puck possession, they've had trouble on the forecheck, why wouldn't you put Halaschuk in there? He's fast. He's tenacious. A guy like James Wright, I think, impressed me actually more in the Sunday game. But you're looking at either probably him or Peluso. Tangrady was moved up to the third line, so he's probably in more favor in Noel's mind right now. But it's probably one of those two guys. So it's tough to say. I like Halaschuk's game a lot, but right now it seems like Peluso will go in for Thorburn unless he wants to put Halaschuk on the right side.
But why? Yeah, why? Yeah, put Halaschuk on the right side. I would. But why? You know, why? Why Peluso? What's he going to provide in those two games against that competition that you really need? You know, you could ideally get if he's going to play 6-7 minutes a game. As why not get a guy in there like Halaschuk who'll go to the net? And it's nothing special. Not the biggest guy. Not the fastest guy in the world, but he'll go to the net and he'll chip away and he'll battle and he can kill penalties if you need him to, and he's just more useful. Well, he'll help you win more.
I mean,
like, you know, Peluso's not Sean Thornton, guys.
He played 3 minutes and 51 seconds on Sunday, and that's his only action of the year so far. You'd expect that Halaschuk at least can bring you more throughout the course of the game to play more than just under 4 minutes.
And it goes to my previous point as well. You want to make him feel part of the team. Right? He hasn't played yet.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that he played 3 minutes and 51 seconds. But as far as, you know, the if you want to call it the 13th, 14th forwards on the team, you'd ideally like to have these guys in the lineup for three or four games at a time, as opposed to kind of putting them in for one game, taking them out, and then you don't get any consistency with their line mates.
True, true.
And, you know, he wanted to put Peluso in because Thorburn didn't have a game in the Jets' second game. But, you know, Halaschuk might not play. I would agree with you, Richie. Probably Friday would be the earliest, but he might not play until, you know, against his former team, actually, on Sunday. But he's a guy that I was a little bit disappointed in personally that he couldn't crack the lineup. But James Wright's another guy that doesn't score a lot of goals, but Noel likes him because if he plays 10 minutes, he can play a little penalty kill. He uses his speed, finishes his checks, you know, that simple type of fourth-line hockey, right? So it's kind of a question mark with Halaschuk. He has to get in the lineup eventually, though, because I thought he was good in the preseason.
I thought he was one of the better players in the preseason. It'll be a fun night tomorrow night in St. Paul. Lots of Jets fans we know of making the trip down there, piggybacking this game along with the Vikings game on Sunday, and of course it being the long weekend. You can hear the game in its entirety on this fine station. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers and their coaching change. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 6 p.m. Wednesday evening here on TSN1290, TSN1290.ca, in case you're listening online. We want to hear from you. Send us a tweet at Illegal Curve on Twitter. You can send us something on Facebook too, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, including audio from Jets practice today at MTS Iceplex, is available at www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, I know I say this at least once a year, probably more often than once a year, but thank God for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah.
All they do is make news. Doesn't matter what they're doing, they always make news. You know, if it's going to be the potential for a slow week, no worries. The Philadelphia Flyers are around the corner to help you out. Of course, I'm referencing them dismissing Peter Laviolette as their head coach 3 games into the season. They hired Craig Berube.
Berube, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Anyways, they hired him to replace Peter Laviolette. They got their first win of the season last night, so congratulations to them on beating the Florida Panthers. But the question I have to ask for you guys, if it's a possibility you're going to fire your head coach, why do you even bother to start the season with the guy if you fire him 3 games in?
I think this is a loyalty factor, Drew. I think Paul Holmgren felt loyal to Peter Laviolette for taking him to the finals, for, you know, beating the Penguins, for doing a lot of good things with this organization, and felt like with all the injuries they had last year, with the porous back end, he put him, you know, he gave him at the end of last year with all the injuries, that he owed Peter Laviolette training camp and early part of the season to see if he really should stay. You know, people are going crazy about, well, if you let him have 3 games, why didn't you just fire him? And we'll ask Anthony about that. Watching this team, I watch this team quite a bit. I don't have that big of an issue with it. I'm not going to blame Holmgren for the loyalty factor here, especially when they're changing on the fly in-house, which, again, is another issue people have brought up. But if you watch this team overall, I mean, how many times, guys, did they play a game and they had a terrible start and Laviolette calls a timeout and they bounce back? That happens a lot with this squad. And part of me says, well, at least they react to him. And the other part of me says, how many more times can they start off poorly before he's got to call a timeout and get their butts in gear? And I think that's kind of what happened here, as a metaphor for the season, in that they started poorly again. That had been an issue before, starting poorly in games or in seasons, wherever it may be. And the organization thought, okay, you know, it hasn't been... it's not something we can continue to do. And Holmgren saw what he saw, and he thought it was enough. Apparently, their training camp was very disorganized. Apparently, it took too long to get rid of Kimmo Tiimonen. Came out today and said, he's their defenseman, one of their leaders, veteran defenseman, said, you know what? Too many of the guys who didn't make this team were with us at the end of the preseason, so we didn't get to play as a team. And Craig Berube kind of said they're playing too much as individuals. So clearly, Laviolette lost the room. And maybe Holmgren should have pulled the trigger last year, but he didn't. And I don't know, the biggest issue with it, if loyalty is his worst quality in this situation, then so be it.
I agree with you, Richie, in regards to your point about the Flyers kind of being hot and cold. They have so much talent on this team. And, year after year, it seems to be blamed on goaltenders. That's that's kind of the way management deals with it. And if they think that it was all Ilya Brizgalov's fault last year, it wasn't, because the Flyers at times looked strong, at other times they looked vulnerable. And it could be the case that Paul Holmgren wanted to fire Laviolette during the off season, but felt like he owed him, you know, one more chance because of how he took them to the Stanley Cup Finals a few years back against the Chicago Blackhawks. But this is a team that I still think, I mean, you look at it two ways. Three games when people say it's not an overreaction, it boggles my mind. Who cares if they scored three goals? It's three games and it means nothing. Now, if you're going to deal with that because you think it's a coaching problem, that's another thing. But as far as the way the team was going, it's such a small sample size. You can't jump to any conclusions. Just like Claude Noel can't be blamed, or this player or that player can't be blamed for three games. Now, if it's 20 games, 25 games, that's one thing. But we know that in Philadelphia, they do things with a knee-jerk reaction. So in that sense, nobody should be surprised. And Craig Berube is a guy that has been with this team and knows this team very well. And I have no problems with them going internally to hire a coach. And then the other question is obviously, well, is this team good enough, and is Craig Berube going to make a difference? I think he'll make a difference in the sense that Peter Laviolette wasn't getting the most out of players like Claude Giroux, and this defense is kind of...
It's not great.
It's not as good as it used to be with Chris Pronger, and you know, Chris Pronger is most likely never going to play again because of his vision problems. Right. But it's a team right now that has put a lot into Vincent LeCavalier and Mark Streit, and those guys are going to have to fill roles that were a weakness last year. So I was surprised that he was fired three games into the year, but not surprised, because the Flyers love to just, if there's a problem, buy the guy out, bring someone else in. Ed Snyder has no problem, you know, wiping the chalkboard clean and then just starting from new.
Well, you know, then along those lines about wiping the chalkboard clean and starting from new, how much longer does Paul Holmgren get?
Well, that's the other question we'll ask Anthony that as well. And Paul Holmgren has done many good things with this organization. One of his weaknesses has been, well, he hasn't added a goaltender, you know, of the quality to get them to the next level. Emery and Mason, many will say, are backups or 1Bs. Probably at tops, 1Bs. Issues with the defense. And my issue with Paul Holmgren is that this offseason he went out and spent a boatload of money on Vinny LeCavalier, bought out Daniel Briere, gave Streit money, but Streit doesn't improve you defensively. He improves you offensively from the back end. He didn't address the hole created by Chris Pronger. From an offensive standpoint, though, I mean, he's signed Giroux, he's signed the core players to long-term deals, Simmons and then Reed and all that. So some people think Ron Hextall, and Darren Dreger touched on this, I believe, in Insider Trading last night, they think Ron Hextall is next waiting in line, and it's only a matter of time. And others will tell you, like Darren Dreger did last night, I believe. Darren Dreger or Bob McKenzie said, you know, Paul Holmgren was vital in getting Ron Hextall to move from the assistant GM spot in Los Angeles to Philadelphia, and they're working together, and Hextall will eventually take over when Holmgren steps aside. You know, Holmgren's not going to be your numbers guy, and he's a tough guy, and he knows what he wants. But I'm not so sure his job should be completely in jeopardy. I mean, Drew, think about it this way, okay? A few years ago, they went to the Cup Final against Chicago. That was, what, four playoffs ago now?
Yeah.
Okay? And then two seasons ago, that's the disappointment. When they beat Pittsburgh, not this past season, but the season prior in the playoffs, and they were playing the Devils. They let their guard down against New Jersey.
Sure.
Because they really should have beat New Jersey.
That was the year the Devils went to the Cup.
Yeah, and they very possibly could have beat the Rangers. I mean, talent-wise, they were probably there. So, obviously, goaltending is a factor, but at the same time, from what we've heard, Ilya Brizgalov's signing was as much Ed Snyder as it was Paul Holmgren. So you have to always take a step back in Philadelphia and say, who's calling the shots?
I think that's a good point, Richie, because Ed Snyder might be the most involved owner that there is. Many owners aren't as involved as Ed Snyder is, but Ed Snyder's been the only owner, right? So
that's right.
I mean, and he's very close to Paul Holmgren, but Paul Holmgren's been the GM there for a while now, and I could see his job being in jeopardy if this team falls off the track and doesn't make the playoffs. I still think there's too much talent there not to make the playoffs. Well, but
I agree.
You know,
it's not easy.
The last couple of years haven't been pretty.
Right, but I'd love to have the problem of up the middle having Giroux, Lecavalier, and Couturier on the right side, Voracek and Simmons and Reed on the left side, Hartnell.
Well, let me ask
it's a very
you
balanced team.
Quickly, and because we're going to have Anthony sure. on in a minute. If they go another 25 games,
right,
and they're still middling and they're average, at what point in time, how many games is enough with this roster to say, you know, maybe they're just not as good as we all think they are?
I know where you're going with that, Drew. I don't think, and again, this is my own personal opinion, but I still think that that wouldn't put Holmgren's job on the line. I feel like that would be an off-season thing just because mm-hmm. of the nature of it. But I didn't expect – Richie called this one. We got to give him credit. I don't know if we have the audio queued up, but Richie predicted that Laviolette might be the first coach fired, and he was right. And I wouldn't have expected that with this team because the Flyers, year after year, and we haven't even mentioned this too. We've mentioned this in previous shows. They draft well year
right.
after
Absolutely.
Year after year.
Absolutely.
And they're always in the playoffs,
that's
almost always.
Yeah.
And, you know, when things don't go right, even for short periods of time. So you might be onto something there. Maybe they do, bring Hexie in there, you know, at the quarter point of the season. Stranger things have happened, and they do happen in Philly.
I don't see it.
This is the audio from Richard on the season preview show a few weeks ago.
Oh, we got it. Attaboy, Reem.
I think too much talent, Drew, based on last year's also poor performance. Too much talent this year up the middle. Giroux, Lecavalier, Couturier is going to have a better year, I think. Too much offensive talent. Their defense isn't, I don't think, cup-worthy, but I think it's playoff-worthy. And I think they'll get enough goaltending out of those two guys, more so Emery than Mason, I think, yep. to at least make the playoffs. Although I think Laviolette, if they start off poorly, could be on the chopping block.
When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo of PhiladelphiaFlyers.com joins us. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there, I'll tell you how I became
that Jazz on the producing there right now?
Apparently Remus got, we'll have to throw him out like Uncle Phil used to throw out Jazz from the house.
Or my dad used to throw out Remus out
of
the house. Threw Ezra out of the house, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Wanted to throw you out, though.
This theme song means that there could only be one person on the phone. That's our buddy from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, how are you, bud?
I'm grooving over here. You kidding me? You playing my music? Come
exactly.
on now.
You know, it's a quid pro quo. You know, you told us, I'm only going to come on the show if I get my own theme song. And from West Philadelphia, born and raised. There you go.
That's right. That's right. It's so true. Only thing is, I got to admit, I would have really, really liked to hear the a cappella version that Remus sang earlier today.
Yeah, he's not quite comfortable enough putting that, getting that out for the public consumption just yet. He's going to try and hit those high notes a little bit better next time.
Sounds good. I can't wait for that one.
Anthony, obviously, we were saying last segment that the Philadelphia Flyers, they do nothing but make news all the time, and they did it again earlier this week, firing Peter Laviolette. You know, what went into the decision? Why was that decision made that it was time for Peter Laviolette to head down the road?
Well, it really is, to take you back, if you look at last season and the way last season ended, obviously, I mean, the team played well at the end of the year, but those games really didn't mean anything. They missed the playoffs, and that's an unacceptable situation here in Philadelphia. It's only happened 9 times in the 47-year history of the franchise. There was some discussion about it possibly at the end of last year, and then it didn't happen because Paul Holmgren thought, okay, here's the situation. It was a shortened season. We didn't really have a training camp. There were a lot of defensive injuries. So we're going to let Peter Laviolette slide, give him a real training camp and into the next season and see what happens. I'm not certain that the original plan was he had 3 games and then that was going to be it. I think it was probably something more along the lines of, you know, 10 games and let's see and we'll reestablish where things are. But training camp did not go well. Nobody really stood out. No young player won a job. They went 1-5-1 in the preseason games. Not that that means a lot. It's just that it shows that they didn't play well, even the young guys. Then you get into the season and you get beat 3-1, 4-1, 2-1. You're not scoring. You're 0-3. Why let it go on? Why let it go those 10 games? So that's why the decision was made when it was.
Do you think he lost the room, Anthony?
I'm not certain that it was that he lost the room, per se, as much as it was that they just couldn't. It was a combination of the the players that are here playing within the system that he wanted to play seem like it didn't work. I mean, if you go back 2010 when they reached the Stanley Cup final, even that year the team struggled a little bit, and you know, this barely made it in on the last day of the season. They were better the next year. They kind of started to get it, but then there was some roster turnover, and although they kind of still hung around, it was not as good as the year before. Then we had last season where it was definitely not as good, and you can start to see that maybe the players that are here just didn't fit that system well. And it's not that Peter Laviolette's not a good coach, or that his message doesn't get across, or he wasn't liked, because you talk to these players, they all liked him. It was just that for this group, a different idea and a different approach had to be put in place, and that's why the change was made.
Is Craig Berube an upgrade on Peter Laviolette at this point?
It depends on your definition of upgrade. Is he an upgrade for this group? Probably, because he's going to play a more defensive style, more conservative style, really force the team to play better without the puck, and then create their opportunities once they get the puck, as opposed to trying to force the action and then getting caught with, you know, odd man rushes the other way, or great chances because the defensemen are left on an island. There's nobody getting back and helping. I think that for this group, he probably is a better choice. That's not to sit here and tell you that he's a better coach than Peter Laviolette. I mean, Peter Laviolette is a Stanley Cup champion. He's won a lot of games, third most victories in the history of the Flyers franchise. So it's not like he's, you know, just being put out the pasture here. He's going to get another job, and he's going to be successful wherever he lands. It's just that for this group of players, it's probably better to have Craig Berube than Peter Laviolette.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of the PhiladelphiaFlyers.com.
Anthony, when it was announced that Peter Laviolette was fired and that they would be replacing him with Craig Berube, there were some, you know, naysayers that said, okay, Philly is just going inside the family again, which to me was kind of puzzling, because if you look at who's in the Philadelphia Flyers front office or behind the bench, it's generally all in the family. It has been for some time. Do you think there is some truth to that, that it might be to their detriment that they like to go inside the family?
Well, I don't think that it's to their detriment, and I also kind of disagree with it a little bit. Maybe in the front office. I mean, the front office, you've only really had, the general managers have only been, there's only been a couple in the past few years, and you know, it's been Bob Clark since 1994, and then Paul Holmgren. So yes, they're both Flyers guys, and they're internal, so it seems like forever since it's been somebody else. But coaches, they've only actually hired, of the 18 coaches in franchise history, only three of them have actually come from inside the organization. Now, you know, I'm being a little bit generous there towards the Flyers, because a guy like Ken Hitchcock was an assistant coach here, but he came from somewhere else, then he left, and then he came back as the head coach. So I'm not counting him, but what I'm saying
that's
is,
fair.
Yeah, three times in out of 18 have they actually brought in a guy who was here, and Craig Berube's the third. So I think it's a little bit more of a reputation than it is reality in that instance. And I'm not a big believer in needing to change the culture. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, I'm going to ask you guys this question. If you're a fan of the Flyers, would you rather your team go all in for 1 year and maybe win it, like let's say like a Tampa Bay did or like a Carolina did, and maybe win it, but then miss the playoffs 14 out of 21 seasons as Tampa Bay has, or 20 out of 20, I think it's 20 out of 29 or 31, whatever it is for the Hartford Carolina franchise. If you miss it all those times and really not be relevant, or would you rather be a team that has a chance every year, even if maybe you haven't won the whole thing?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, Anthony. You want to be the team with continued success because you have more chances to win that cup than if you're Carolina and strike it a couple times, right? Or you get hot and play the Oilers in 2006. Totally agree. And, you know, looking at this team, Richards and Carter are obviously gone, and that group is passed, or maybe Scott Hartnell, one or two guys are still left, but Lupo and all those guys have gone through town. Anthony, when you watch this team, I see a ton of talent. I see puck moving ability. But I'm wondering, you know, who's the leader of this team?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's Claude Giroux is the leader, although he's not playing like it right now. But he's definitely the leader of the team. But there's a reason, and I should point this out. Kimmo Tiiminen wears an A, as does Scott Hartnell. But they have different titles. It's kind of interesting. I think maybe the Flyers are the only team in the NHL who do this. While Hartnell is an alternate captain, like every other team has two A's, Kimmo Tiimonen's A stands for associate captain, which is kind of like co-captain if you want to translate it in English properly. So it means that like he's also the captain as Giroux is, and I think that's more because they want him to be the veteran voice. You know, Claude Giroux's 25 years old, and he's getting to that age where he can really develop into a very good leader, and you're starting to see him do things better. But I mean, I think it was good to have somebody like Tiimonen there to be the real leader in the room, and then you bring in guys who were captains in other teams with Mark Streit, Vinny LeCavalier. So there are some veterans in that room who are part of this leadership group, and they kind of work it together. But Claude Giroux, if you had to pick one person, is definitely their leader.
Do you expect this change to have an effect on the team's performance over the long term?
It's a good question. You know, you'd like to think that the team is better than they were showing in the first three games. And they won last night, but I didn't think they looked all that much better. They won last night because Steve Mason had an excellent game in goal, made 33 saves to stop the Florida Panthers, who actually played a pretty good game, even though they're not a great team either. So you'd like to think that this talent figures it out. It might take a few games. I mean, Craig Berube is changing the system, and you know, each day there's new things being put in. And maybe it will work with this group, and maybe it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then the question is, well, is the talent what you think it is? Is it as good as you know, we've made these players out to be mm-hmm. better than maybe they are? And then who falls on that sword? You know, does Paul Holmgren take the blame for that? Or, you know, where does that happen? And, you know, you brought Ron Hextall in as an assistant general manager this year. You know, there's a reason he's here. A lot of people think he's the next general manager when and if Paul decides to move on or something happens. So, you know, there's a lot of possibilities moving forward, and I don't think that this is a firmed-up situation just yet. I think it's going to be something that's got to play out, and we'll figure it out at that point.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of PhiladelphiaFlyers.com discussing the coaching change the Flyers made earlier this week. Anthony, on our Saturday show, we had John Paddock on to talk about Teemu Selanne, and at the time he was director of player personnel. He's now an assistant head coach along with Ian LaPerriere. Kevin McCarthy, who was an assistant coach, was let go along with Peter Laviolette. What are your thoughts on the two new assistants that are going to be next to Craig Berube?
Well, I think that that's kind of an underrated thing that's happened here with this move. John Paddock is a guy, as you guys know pretty well, who's got a wealth of coaching experience both at the NHL and AHL levels. He's really like the veteran guy, and I think he's the guy that Berube will lean on if there's ever, you know, hey, should we do it this way? Should we do it that way? Really kind of picking his brain, because he's served in so many positions for so many different teams and organizations. And, so I think that that's what his role really is. And then Ian LaPerriere is an interesting one. You know, he was the director of player development here prior to being named an assistant coach and did a real nice job with a lot of the Flyers' young prospects, who the organization now believes are a little bit ahead of where they maybe should be. And so they think that a lot of that has to do with the way Lappy approached them and stayed on top of them, went and visited them at their junior team and everything else. And they feel like bringing him onto this, onto the bench will help the younger players, your Sean Couturier's, your Braden Schenn, Zach Rinaldo, and teach them how to play hockey the right way at the NHL level. And I think that's what he's bringing. He's going to bring that energy and enthusiasm to the bench. So I think those two moves are almost as critical. Nobody really even talks about them, but almost as critical as the coaching change itself.
Anthony, you mentioned Ron Hextall a little bit. He's obviously the assistant GM in his first year. Do you think Paul Holmgren's job is on the line at all?
Not right away. I think that it could be down the road if this season turns out to be a disaster, and now all of a sudden you're going to go from, you know, if you look at his tenure, going from reaching the finals in 2010 to being bounced in the second round in 11, bounced in the second round in 12, getting swept in the second round in 12, not making the playoffs last season, and then not making the playoffs again this season. That's a progression in the negative of five straight years. At that point, you think, well, maybe there does need to be a change there. But I don't think it's a given. I don't think it's an automatic. I think that it will really depend on how this team plays. But certainly it's something that's on the mind of a lot of people around here, and we'll have to see how it plays out.
Final question, Anthony. We talked about Holmgren's job security, but Ron Hextall, assuming he's, you know, Holmgren's not going to lose his job in the you know, near future. Ron Hextall's say on this firing, was it solely Paul Holmgren? I know obviously they're working together, but was this a Holmgren decision or a joint decision?
Well, that's a great question, I don't know if I have the exact answer for you. I can tell you what we've been told, and Paul said that, you know, it was something that he reached out to Ron Hextall at the draft, on the draft floor. As a matter of fact, he said he had the conversation right in front of the Illegal Curve table.
I actually remember that, though, that they actually were talking there.
They were, and I wasn't saying that to be funny. I was saying it because it was true. It was right in front of you guys. And they actually, that's when he pulled him aside, and he said he talked to him and said, hey, what do you think about coming back and working with us? And, you know, Hextall thought about it, and I asked Ron, I said, you know, why the sideways move in so many ways? And he said he just felt like it was a gut feeling, like it was the right thing to do, to come back to the Flyers organization where he made his bones, mm-hmm. and help the Flyers do what he did out in L.A., help the L.A. Kings win a Stanley Cup. He felt he could do the same thing in Philadelphia. So I think that there's, in the back of his mind, he realizes that he's probably got a better chance of being the successor here than maybe he did in L.A., but, and that maybe helps to that decision, but at the same time, you know, Paul said he went up to him, and you guys saw it, I saw it, so I have to believe that that's how it broke down.
Anthony Sanfilippo of PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. I assume that, you know, there's a calendar up next to your bed where just are Xing off the days about 5 weeks from now when you're going to be back here and you get to spend some QT with us.
How about this? We get an extra day in Winnipeg this year. Now, we arrive. We come straight from Pittsburgh. We're there on Thursday the 14th, and then the game's on Friday the 15th. So I got a free day in your wonderful burg. I can't wait to get there.
More importantly, do you have a free bedroom for when the draft is next year in Philadelphia for us to stay in?
Are you kidding me? You guys are crashing in the man cave.
Sounds good to us, Anthony. We'll see you in about a month, bud. Thanks very much.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Anthony.
Thanks, Anthony.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Anthony Sanfilippo of PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. Like I said, a Hall of Fame guest on this program, been with us, countless number of times over the last number of years. And anybody who actually wants to socialize with us outside of just the show, you know, you get to question his judgment, but that's a separate issue altogether. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available, of course, on tsn1290.ca. We'll throw it up on illegalcurve.com as well, and you can download it on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
Remus, what's Drew's age again? Come on.
You know, it's from the guy who's turning 30 in about 2 weeks' time, give or take. You can't make many of those jokes anymore, my friend. You know, you're dressed like a retiree today, wearing a mustard yellow sweater.
Drew, sorry, I'm not dressed like Al Borland, with your usual attire.
With an orange shirt underneath, you look like you're ready to head out to the retirement community in West Palm Beach.
Drew does look like Al Borland. I don't know how he never...
I've said that before.
Now that he has the beard, because he didn't always have the beard until...
Two shows ago, he wore a plaid shirt and the beard. I swear, when you were in the other studio, I thought you were Wilson, and he was Al Borland, and Ezzy was Tim.
Ezzy?
Or Jonathan Taylor Thomas, one of the two.
Anyways, still to come on the show tonight, 7:30 p.m., San Jose Sharks assistant general manager Joe Will is going to join us. Very much looking forward to that. Talk about the San Jose Sharks organization with him. Couple odds and ends, news and notes from around the NHL around this week. Last night, Brad Stewart. I'll tell you what, it was a bad night for the New York Rangers.
Yes.
Embarrassed on the ice, 9-2. And Rick Nash gets concussed by a Brad Stewart elbow. Stewart had a phone hearing with the NHL today. Still no word regarding any outcome, if there's going to be a suspension to Brad Stewart there. What were your thoughts on the hit?
Watch from a number of angles, Drew. A little bit high. It wasn't crazy. I mean, you know, Stewart's a physical guy. He's trying to follow through on his check and pinch at the line there, and... He hits him a little high, higher than you want it to be. I mean, a different angle, I thought it was even a shoulder. So the angles, depending on which angle I looked at it as. But, yeah, you have to discipline him because it's right to the head. But I mean, you probably see that play a lot in a regular game. And unfortunately, Nash, and remember, Nash had the concussion last year. Nash had the concussion from the Lucic hit. So a couple of concussions in a short period of time. If you're the Rangers, you have to be very cautious. And if you're Rick Nash, obviously your well-being is at risk.
Yeah, Richie, I don't think that the intent was there to injure, but it was definitely a hit to the head. And that's why there was obviously a hearing. So if the NHL is going to be consistent with punishing players for hits to the head, you have to think that Stewart gets at least a game there.
Same game, Thomas Hertl scores his fourth goal of the game. Any problems with the showmanship that was involved with it?
You know, people have to relax because it's a fourth goal. I mean, he's not trying that for the hat trick, and he's not trying it if it's 2-1. He's having fun. He's a young guy. He's got some flair, and he tried it, and he scored. Any way you try it and score is kosher for me. If you're going to try a weird play and not score, I don't really care either, but your teammates will care. But I had absolutely no issue with this, and people just want to make things to talk about. It was completely fine.
I didn't have a problem with it, and he surely didn't have a problem with it. It didn't seem like any of his teammates had a problem with it. Did the Rangers have a problem with it? Probably.
If I'm the Rangers, I have more of a problem with the fact they gave up 9 goals. I mean,
exactly.
It's pretty straightforward. You don't want him to try that move on you. Don't give him a breakaway, and don't be down 8-2.
Yeah, it's the way that they finished that they, you're right, Drew, the way they finished should be the main concern. And, you know, it was a fantastic move. The guy scored 4 goals. He's got 6 goals now. I think, you know, if anybody doesn't like it, maybe it's jealousy. Maybe it's having a problem with seeing something exciting. I mean, it was exciting. That was the nicest goal we've seen this year. It might be the nicest goal we've seen in some time. So I don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with, you know, guys, you know, putting the toe of their stick on the puck. If you remember a few years back, Dogovins did that. I had a problem with that because that's making a mockery of the shootout, which I already don't like. But if a guy's gonna, you know, is on a breakaway, I mean, put it this way: if he did a, you know, the old Alexei Zamenhof, Peter Forsberg, one-handed move, would anybody have a problem with that? Probably not. It's because it went between the legs. But again, you see guys do that in the NBA all the time with putting the ball between their legs, and I think we need to get over it. It was a nice goal, and you should celebrate it as such.
Speaking of goals, Mason Raymond, Saturday night in that great Leafs-Sens game, won the shootout with a spinorama move. Sens, Ottawa Senators head coach Paul McLean was not happy about that goal counting, saying that it was a quote-unquote very unfair. Your thoughts on the Mason Raymond goal? Should that be, was that kosher in your mind?
Richie, this is the thing. Just quickly, I'll let you go. You know, they said that they were going to try to cut that out, and that's what the gray area was. So I can understand why McLean is mad, because you're looking at it, and does he come to a complete stop? I mean, it's kind of subjective, right? And I don't think it should be subjective.
Yeah. The rule stipulates that the puck must constantly be moving forward for it to be legal.
Which makes no sense, because half the time when you make a deal, like the Datsyuk deke, he pulls it back, and then he roofs it.
Right.
So come on. I mean, and the NHL, this is what the NHL wants to do. They want to allow this goal because they want to increase scoring, but they don't want to technically have guys doing circles around the offensive zone. So they kind of leave it as a gray area, and they're happy with it.
Yeah, and that's why he was upset, and they counted it, but they had a conference call with Brian Murray, and they said, oh, we're not going to count these. And then it was
– That was
in the offseason. They were told it was gray area. But, I mean, there shouldn't be – as we said, if a guy scores a clean legal goal, then that's fine. But if it's one of those areas where – you know, the puck is moving forward, but his momentum stops. It's a little ridiculous.
I have a great idea. Take out the shootout. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, that Ken Holland's 3-on-3 idea after a 4-on-4 overtime can't get any traction boggles my mind. They do it in the Traverse City rookie tournament, and everybody loves it.
People go to that?
Well, they claim to love it. And the NHL says they're concerned about the length of time in the game. Who's going to leave a game that's about to go into a 3-on-3 set
of overtime? Drew, that's what you do, is you go back to ties, and that was the whole issue with the shootout. Oh, we can't have ties. Why not?
Yeah.
You had them before. Why can't you still have them? So I don't. By the way, I don't think the shootout's going anywhere though.
Unfortunately, I agree with you. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll spend some time talking about some news around defensemen in the NHL. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Get on top!
1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online at tsn1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. To the left of me, Ezra Ginsberg. To my far left, Richard Pollock. And producer Remus gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is.
Well, he tries.
I know. I was being nice. Yeah. I know. We're just, the screw up is the screw up, and we'll just hold it over for the next couple of weeks. Yeah. Again, I maintain, he just doesn't do it for Rick. When he's on with Rick, it's a perfect show. But with us, he can slack off a little bit.
Hey, so are you texting over there?
See? No texting with Rick, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. You guys text all the time during the show.
Who do you text? Who are you texting right now?
I think we both know who's
texting. I'm texting, guys. Relax.
Yeah, you're texting the new girl. The girl who you almost took to Applebee's to watch UFC, eh?
Yeah.
I got a few texts about that.
Oh, my
from
God.
Girls, and they said they'd be willing to go with you.
Really?
Yeah.
UFC fans?
Good thing you're locked in.
That was a title fight, too. I only go out for the title fights.
Where do you go for the other fights?
Watch them at home.
Alrighty. Defensemen in and around the NHL are making some news this week. Let's start in Edmonton, where it sounds like the Edmonton Oilers are in the market for a defenseman. It's sort of been saying that the Oilers have needed to upgrade their defense for the last number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that weakness right now what's keeping them between being real playoff contenders?
Well, their injuries are keeping them right now from being playoff contenders, from being serious playoff contenders. Yeah, I mean, maturation up front, size up front, a big-time defenseman, and arguably goaltending, depending on how you think about Dubnyk. But so there's many holes in this team, but they have a lot of talent. So if you're going to build from anything, you build from talent. Do they need a defenseman? Sure. And do they have a luxury of forwards? Of course they do. Do you want to pull the trigger is a question for for Craig McTavish, and I think he likely will. He's talked aggressively, as he, but he's only really done the Perron trade and then the Ferentz signing. I mean, those weren't huge trades. He traded Parvi, and Perron's more talented than Parvi, and pick and such. But overall, he hasn't done too much, and he seems like he wants to. You wonder if Gal Yakupov can pull in a huge, big defense package. I mean, that's just throwing out names, but...
Yeah. Well, you also got to, I think, at some point in time, factor in that it's going to be difficult to sign all these guys long-term, these forwards. So if you can trade one of them, and instead you acquire somebody who's already under contract, mm-hmm. who's got some cost certainty, you can mark it down in pen what he's going to cost you for the X number of years, I think there's got to be an appeal to that from the Edmonton Oilers' perspective.
I agree with that. But the question is, who is going to be?
Well, obviously.
Right? I mean, who are you going to... Because if you're a guy, you got Yakupov, Izzy, you're probably looking around saying, I want Alvin Ekman-Larsson. That's who I want for a guy like Yakupov. It's like, yeah, it's not happening. Likely.
Yeah, in the off season, they addressed this in many different ways. They went out, well, they didn't go out, but they signed Anton Belov, 27 years old, from the KHL. He's a bigger guy, mobile. They signed Andrew Ferentz. They brought back Denis Grebishkov. Those are three defensemen right there. And I don't think the defense is the problem for this team. I think it's goaltending. And Dubnyk has not been good, and he was signed to a longer-term contract. And this is kind of a make-or-break year for him. But they've brought in Justin Schultz a couple of summers ago. And, right now they don't have Sam Gagner, but I don't think that... I mean, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Richie, you mentioned that, but I think we'd both agree that it's going to have to be a big haul coming back the other way if they're going to move him. And Yakupov hasn't impressed that much early on. And I'm talking about last year, too. I mean, there were spurts, but he struggled at times, too. So to me, the goaltending is the bigger issue. And right now, a guy like Gagner, who has been a huge part of the team. I mean, Taylor Hall now is back to the wing because Nugent Hopkins is back. And we're talking about the Oilers, having to make, and I know Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie both reported it, and, Mac T said that he was going to make a bold move. But he's made some moves, and I think it's too early to start talking about moving one of the, first overall picks out of here.
Well, it might not be him, Ezzy, but it's going to have to be somebody to get, who you're going to trade, the question, right? I mean, Hemsky's not going to bring you back enough.
Right.
Smith was a healthy scratch. I mean, those guys are
100 years old.
They've seen their better days, right? So then the question is, Hall? No, he's not going anywhere. Nugent Hopkins isn't going anywhere. And then you just acquired Perron, and what are you going to get from him? You already know what the market is. You just made a trade. And you're not going to trade defensemen necessarily to get defensemen. So doesn't that almost only leave you with Yakupov, unless you want to do Yakupov and more picks or picks period?
Perhaps.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm looking at it. I'm not saying that Yakupov isn't in the conversation. I just think it's way too early to start thinking that of moving. If you were going to move him, I think you would have moved him in the offseason. I think after three games, if you think that's the problem. But I think it's goaltending that's the bigger problem in Edmonton.
And the other issue is, you know, if they're not going to trade Everly either, likely. And the other issue is if you trade him, you could probably trade him to a team that's got a luxury of defensemen. Few teams do. I mean, a team like the Rangers have a luxury of pretty good top defensemen, but what do they have up front? What style they're going to play? And they need to resign Lundqvist and stuff. So there's issues there. I mean, what team has the luxury of top-end defensemen?
It's one of the reasons why you just don't see very big-name players traded for very big-name players in this day and age anymore.
Yeah.
With the salary cap and everything else factoring in, it's hard to find the salaries that perfectly match up.
Right, and one of the teams right now that's trying to move a defenseman is Toronto, and a guy like John Michael Lyles is making too much money, and he's not playing in the top six. But
yeah, he can't defend.
Teams that are the top teams defensively, whether it's L.A., whether it's Boston, whether it's Chicago, whether it's Vancouver, if they trade one of their top defensemen, and if you're talking about a Yakupov, then you're talking about one of their top defensemen,
that's right,
or at the very least their third or fourth defenseman, then you have to really, really want that player. And right now, you know, your guess is as good as mine as far as who's in that conversation. But they haven't gotten off to the start that they liked, for sure.
And, I mean, to me, if I think of other teams, you talk about the Rangers, it's St. Louis with great depth on defense, and you're talking about guys like Shattenkirk's, because they're not going to trade Pietrangelo. That's the kind of guys you're talking about, and probably more, for a guy like that, because you want a guy who can go up and play 25 minutes a night and push everybody down. And to do something this year, they might want to do it. McTavish keeps talking like he wants to make moves or has. So it'd be interesting. And Dallas Eakins, different coaches, of course, they've had 30 different coaches over the past 3 years, but different coaches have different perspectives of certain players. And so far, Eakins clearly hasn't loved what he's seen out of Yakupov. He's been playing on the third line. He's a guy who we know how talented he is. Mm-hmm. He can skate and he can shoot and all that stuff, but has he bought into team concept? I don't know. I haven't watched him enough. I've only seen him a bit this year. But, I mean, he's clearly not getting big-time ice time. So we'll see. And they have options, guys, right? Like, you know, that was the whole battle before. Do you draft Yakupov? Do you draft Murray?
Sure, because everyone could see easily on the roster that's where they needed the defensive help.
Right. And they opted for Yakupov, so... You know,
well, let me ask, would Columbus make that trade today?
Yakupov's playing 15-54 a game. What?
Would Columbus do a Yakupov for Murray trade today, you think?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, which of the two players? I mean, obviously Murray had his injury problems all last year. He missed the entire season. But, I mean, it's hard to believe that what you've seen out of Nile Yakupov so far.
I think what they want is a defenseman who's further along.
Sure, I agree with you. I think they want a guy that they can put into their lineup and really solidify the top four of that defense.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but you look back to 2006, right, and the Oilers were able to acquire Chris Pronger.
That's right.
And, you know, Richie mentioned Kevin Shattenkirk, and it's funny because of the Perron-Pajarvi trade. It would be funny if they traded, again, St. Louis and Edmonton.
Lowe and Armstrong both in the Canadian Olympics management team, too.
Right, and Edmonton, I didn't pick them to make the playoffs this year, and it's for this exact same reason. I don't think the goaltending is taught. I don't think the young guys are at the stages. Everyone expects Edmonton because they have all of these first overall picks. And Richie, you mentioned this quite accurately.
Adam for the playoffs.
They have fast, speedy wingers, but you don't just throw out their system. We don't really even know if they've bought into the system yet. Dallas Eakins is his first NHL team, first head coaching job, and sure he's brought in all of these creative kind of ideas with the nutrition and everything, and I respect him, and I think he's a good coach, but hitting the panic button this early, and you don't have Sam Gagner, I mean, that's huge. Sam Gagner is a veteran on that team. It's hard to believe that he's a veteran on that team, but he really is, because you have so many young players there, and then you throw in the guys on defense, too. You throw in a Belov. This is his first NHL experience. Justin Schultz only had a half season. And he's not, you know, Richie mentioned you want a more, you know, bona fide defenseman. And that's because if you look at all of the teams that have had success over the last few years, sure, there might be young defensemen, but they're always supported by rock-solid veterans. And right now, Edmonton's a work in progress. And, you know, do they kind of shake things up because things aren't going well by trading a Yakupov? I wouldn't be shocked.
Another buy-low candidate, another guy who was a high draft pick, that's Adam Larson. He was the fourth overall draft pick in the 2011 NHL draft. Since then, hasn't really been able to crack the New Jersey Devils lineup on a regular basis. He was a healthy scratch last night against the Vancouver Canucks. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that teams might be looking to poach from the Devils at this point.
I'll quickly make a comment because I know Ezzy watches the Devils more than I do and knows more about them than I do. I just haven't seen from Adam Larson, even when he played in junior, I mean, in the World Sweet, Juniors, excuse me. I haven't seen that one or two things to make me gaga over him for such a high pick. I mean, I haven't been sold on what I've seen.
He's got, you know, excellent, if not top level wheels. He's incredibly fast. And he was put into the NHL. Well, he was put into the starting lineup as an 18-year-old. And he bounced in. That was the year the Devils went to the Cup. And Larson was in and out of the lineup that year. I think it was five or six games that he played when the Devils went to the finals against the Kings. But he's got unbelievable skating abilities. And he's still struggling to learn the defensive side of the game. And that's why Peter DeBoer takes him in and out of the lineup and puts a guy like Mark Fain in there or Peter Harold, who are the sixth defenseman. But I haven't really liked how they've used Larson. I mean, you put him in the AHL and let him play 20 minutes a game. And they were playing him 20 minutes a game in his rookie year. And now they've kind of put him back as a bottom-pairing defenseman. And he's kind of stunted. But I think the tools are there. He's 20 years old. I mean, you can't jump to any conclusions. I would be shocked if the Devils moved him, because I think I'll get into it a little later in three things I learned this week, but the Devils don't have that many players signed long term aside from Anton Volchenkov, nobody on the blue line, and he's a big part of their future because they've got guys like Urbom and John Merrill, but they don't have any 1A prospects coming. So I mean, I think we're going to continue to see him in and out of the lineup, but I don't really like how they're doing it. I think they should almost play him in Albany. I don't know if a guy at 20 years old with his talent is really served well in the press box.
Quickly before we go to break, Ezzy, did you change your Twitter handle?
I did.
You're no longer part of the IC? You know, you're no longer IC Ezzy G? Is there something you want to tell us?
You can call me whatever. I'm obviously still part of a legal curve. I just changed the name. It's... You know,
is he branching out on his own? Are you going out? You're going to create your own brand?
No.
Is that Jim Gray outside, ready to interview you right now?
No, it was just a change. I'll change it back if you guys don't like it. I'm a team player.
What is it now?
Right now, it's at Big Bad Ezzy.
It's the same name that I use on Instagram. So.
Well, that's a separate issue altogether,
I suppose.
I was a
little bored, so.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, six things we learned this week.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg to my left, Richard Pollock to my far left, and Michael Remus getting us on and off the air. It's time for six things we learned this week.
Six
things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Ezzy Ginsberg, the Florida Panthers and the New York Rangers only have three players under contract through the 2015-2016 NHL season.
First off, I'm really glad this segment is back because this is my favorite segment and I love doing this. It means that we're in the meat of the regular season already. This is why I brought this up. Gord Miller actually brought this up during the Canucks-Devils game, the late game on TSN yesterday. He was talking about how the Devils only have six players signed through 2015-2016. This is why I find this so interesting, because when you look forward, and we always talk about players and where they're at and the type of ceiling that they have and their contracts and their terms and all that, but it's interesting because going forward, those are two teams that have a lot of flexibility. And another team that only has five players is the Calgary Flames. I mentioned the Devils, they only have six players. But the team that actually has the most players under contract is the Philadelphia Flyers. They have 14 players under contract through 2015-2016. The Jets have 11. And you got to keep in mind Trouba and Scheifele are counted among those. And so for Philadelphia, you're not counting Pronger. But Richie, the reason why I find this so fascinating is because on average, I went through all the teams. I did some research here. And the average is usually about 9 players signed through the next 3 years. And I think the next 3 years are important. Not only because the salary cap is going up, it might be as high as $80 million from what we've heard, but it kind of gives you a window into where the team is. And a team like the Florida Panthers, they've got Barkov and they've got Huberdeau, mm-hmm. but aside from them and Versteegen Campbell, I mean, they have tons of flexibility. They don't have goaltenders locked up. They don't have a lot of forwards locked up. And it shows you that they're probably a team to watch as far as making moves and being active in the free agency market. I mean,
New owner,
and the New York Rangers are going to have tons of flexibility with the guys they have under contract. You only have Rick Nash, Brad Richards, and Ryan McDonagh under contract over the next 3 years. You have guys like Zuccarello and Hagelin and Delzato, all these really good players. Lundqvist is a pending UFA. It's interesting because you know that those teams are going to be extremely active. Devils are going to be one of them. The Jets probably not so much because they have all these guys locked up in the core.
Five.
Richard Pollock, Dustin Brown gets a ton of attention for what he does with the LA Kings, but Justin Williams plays just as significant a role on that team and does it very well.
They play together a lot with Anze Kopitar, but Justin Williams just does everything well. You know, he's really good along the boards. He's a good stick handler. He sees the ice well. He goes to the net. He's tough. He's won two cups, guys. Carolina, people forget about that, and LA. It's one of the guys that Philly shouldn't have got rid of. I'm sure they regret it. That was Bobby Clark, I believe, who got rid of him at that time. You know, injury prone earlier in his career, but a guy who is, play on my team any day of the week, and Brown gets the attention, he runs around, he hits. And Brown's a great player, don't get me wrong. But Justin Williams is nobody talks about him there. And he is very important to what they do.
Four.
Ezzie Ginsberg, defenseman Ryan Stanton was a smart waiver wire pickup for the Vancouver Canucks and could even stick in the team's top six defensemen.
And that's a bit of a stretch, but here's my reasoning here. And, everybody knows that Adam Party was put on waivers, but then he was kept up because of an injury, and he's back down in St. John's. But this is a guy that was picked up off of waivers, and everyone kind of said, who? Ryan Stanton. And if you watch him play, he's been paired up with Chris Tanev. He's got some decent size, some decent wheels. And the other options there are Andrew Alberts. He's getting some ice time, not tons of ice time, but he looked good with Tanev early on in the season. The Canucks have been doing pretty well. They got the overtime win yesterday. And for a guy that's, I think he's making the league minimum, a guy that doesn't have any NHL experience, the Chicago Blackhawks let him go. Interesting to note that 3 years back, he was the voted most improved player for his team, Rockford, in the AHL. I mean, for a waiver wire pickup, it looks pretty good. Speaking of waiver wire pickups, Mike Santarelli's looking pretty good there in Vancouver as well.
Absolutely. You signed to a two-way contract.
Yes, what were you doing over there?
Wasn't paying attention. I had to throw something at him, that's for sure.
I'm listening to you guys. You know what? You worry about doing your job.
Your head was down. It was a head down.
It was a serious text right there.
I got dinner plans I'm trying to figure out.
Where are you guys going tonight?
I don't know if I want to say. We're on the air, man.
Okay, what kind of food is it going to be?
Asian?
Ooh, interesting. Am I invited?
If you want to come.
Wait, no, I'll think about it.
Three.
Sticking with the Vancouver Canucks, they need to add depth to their third line if they want to make the playoffs and a serious Stanley Cup run.
You guys, you watch this Vancouver Canucks team and you think, okay, obviously the Sedins, which they've broken up at times, but Sedins with Hansen right now with Burrows out, and then Kessler playing majority with Booth, with Higgins last game. As you mentioned, Santarelli, but I mean, guys, like who else do they have right now? A lot of fringe players, and Matty Mahotra was used exclusively almost for face-offs and defensive zone face-offs and for certain times of the game, and obviously he incurred that eye injury, and the other players they had maybe didn't fill the roles that they thought they would, but obviously Cassian, there's a suspension there. So, I mean, you have Cassian. You have Cassian and you have the Burrows injury. Even so, especially a third-line center, this team needs help. This team, and I heard an interview with a Vancouver writer saying he wasn't sure if they make the playoffs. I think this is a playoff team, but if they want to do anything in the playoffs at all, they have to improve their depth, especially up the middle.
Two.
Ezra Ginsberg, there's more than one rookie to watch in San Jose this year. Matthew Nieto has been impressive early on this season. 3 games played, 1 goal, 2 assists, 3 points.
Richie mentioned the Vancouver third line, and I agree with him. I think the injuries to Alex Burrows and Jordan Schrader is another guy who's injured. That forces other guys to move up the line, so I agree with them. And there are injuries in San Jose as well. Martin Havlat, who seems to have fallen off the face of the earth, is injured. Rafi Torres also has a serious injury. So what that means is Thomas Hertl and Matthew Nieto have been given the chance to play both as rookies. And San Jose always does a great job of bringing along rookies. Logan Couture, Joe Pavelski, Setoguchi, all these guys, they really insulate them well. And he's an interesting story because he's the first California-born player to ever be signed and to play for the San Jose Sharks. He had a really good college career. Right now he's playing on the third line. It helps that he's playing with Joe Pavelski. Mm-hmm. But Tommy Wingles is another guy. He's got a great name. And last night they were great. Thomas Hertl got the 4 goals, and he got the beautiful between the legs goal. But look out for Matthew Nieto, because he's a pretty good hockey player as well, and comes highly regarded out of Boston University.
All right, for the next one?
Yeah.
Give Remus a break there, waiting for our next guest.
Yeah, exactly. Remus is on the phone, but he's doing good work at this point. Rich, the Eastern Conference is extremely top-heavy. Aside from Boston and Detroit, other teams have significant question marks.
Look at these teams, guys. I mean, I know Pittsburgh obviously is top talent, but, I mean, their depth lines aren't as good as they were in the past. Their defense, no Letang right now. Who knows, that injury could be longer than we anticipated. Fleury's not the most predictable. So there you have those issues. Look at Philly. Who knows what's going on there? Rangers don't look so good. I really like the Islanders. But, I mean, you look at the rest of the teams. Florida, Tampa. There's a ton of holes in the Eastern Conference, and I think aside from Boston and Detroit, you really have a drop-off. And Pittsburgh is in that group, but there are possibilities of them dropping off. The rest of them, I think it's very top-heavy.
That's it for 6 things we learned this week. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by San Jose Sharks Assistant General Manager Joe Will. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, and that's Michael Remus. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to NHL Midweek, he's the Assistant General Manager of the San Jose Sharks, Joe Will. Joe, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
Joe, we wanted to start by talking to you today, talking about the guy who's your boss, the general manager, the long-term general manager there in San Jose now. That's Doug Wilson. For our audience, can you tell us what it's like working with Doug Wilson on a day-to-day basis? What is his best quality as a general manager?
Really that he's just an ultimate pro and a team guy. Doug has made the playoffs every year as a general manager, and as a player he had a similar type of record. He's a great team person. He enables people to do their jobs, and everybody's biggest supporters, from the players to the coaches to the scouts to everybody.
Joe, I think you'd agree that it's been really exciting to watch the transition of Brent Burns from a defenseman to a forward. As far as that transition goes, did that drastically change the Sharks' off-season plan this past summer?
Yeah, it helped us. It gave us options. I mean, we look at him that he's, even though he's playing forward now, he's great at both positions. And we saw that back to his junior days. I saw a little bit of that in Minnesota, so we knew that was there. But with we have a pretty good abundance of defensemen that he was able to go up and, especially last year, fill in some holes at forward and started some great chemistry.
Now, Joe, we hear a lot about statistics in sports and how stats, the transformation obviously in baseball has been well heralded, and some people talk about it in hockey, basketball even more so. Where do you think hockey sits on that whole scale of statistics in the game and how they're utilized both at a management level and at a coaching level?
Well, I think it's certainly gotten better over the past, 10, 15 years, and the use of analytics and video has really increased, I think, with most teams. I think you hear about it with certain teams more than others, but I think everybody's using it to a higher level than they used to, and I think it generally helps teams, but it's still a game of character and intangibles, and that's really, I think one element that really, separates teams.
You're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by San Jose Sharks Assistant General Manager Joe Will. Joe, one of the duties you have as the Assistant General Manager is to be the salary cap guru, which I'm sure, and I think I can speak for my colleagues in studio here, is not an easy task to do that. Can you sort of explain for our audience what goes into managing the salary cap on a day-to-day basis?
It's trying to be proactive, looking at the season as a whole, looking who might get injured or who we may want to change and move back and forth. At the same time with the salary cap, we have a 23-man roster, so it's just a lot of juggling between the minors and the NHL team. So it's just making sure that we as a management staff are in touch with the trainers and coaches to be proactive as much as possible with our moves.
We've heard a lot about the Vancouver Canucks and how they employ sleep doctors. And, hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot here, but because the San Jose Sharks have a ton of travel on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, is that something that the Sharks do?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We do know that there is more travel on the West Coast, but we also know that Anaheim and L.A. recently won Stanley Cups, and we're in an area right here where there's been a lot of very successful teams with the 49ers and the Giants and Stanford football. And so we've studied what we need to do. We have a great team. Todd McClellan's really on top of it. Mike Potenza, our strength and conditioning coach, and Ray Tuss, our head trainer, they do a great job at working together and just scheduling, knowing that we're a West Coast team, getting our sleep, eating, working out ratio with our practices, really in sync. And, it's been done quite often out in California to success. And so it's just you need to really adjust.
Joe, on that point, when you talk about travel and sleep and all those other things, how much of that, you mentioned before character and things like that, how do you balance talking about those things and getting in the players' heads so it becomes more of a mental issue as much as it is, or if not more, than a physical issue?
Yeah, I think our players know. We have a number of guys who have been out here pretty long tenure, and even some of our younger guys, they've been here since they're 18 years old. So they've kind of grown up in the culture of just knowing we're a West Coast team and adjusted to it. So I don't think it really gets into their head very much. They're just really used to it.
Have you ever had a player, when you're courting to sign, come up and say, I know there's talk about some other teams with the huge travel, not wanting to do that travel. Have you ever had a player say, that's just, I like the way your team's built, I like the talent, play with Joe Thornton, but I just don't want to do that travel?
Not really, because when they come out here, they see just a beautiful area that, the weather's great. So there's a lot of other factors out here. So, granted, there is a bit more travel, but there's quite a few teams in the NHL that have a high level of travel. So it's, more goes down to looking at the area as a whole, and it's a great place to live and raise a family out here.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by San Jose Sharks Assistant General Manager Joe Will. Joe, with this being an Olympic year and, year in, year out, the San Jose Sharks are fortunate to be not fortunate, but they've done enough to be a good team. That means a lot of your players are going to be heading to the Olympics. Does Coach Todd McClellan a lot for more rest throughout the season for the whole team as a result of that, or does he really sort of specify it for just those players who might be heading to the Olympics?
I think we look at the year as a whole. They did give us a pretty good break in there. It's as much of a emotional type set up as it is a physical one for the Olympics for many players. But there's so many players with different countries and a lot of NHL players involved in the Olympics. So it's not really us. It's many teams in this league. Todd is aware of it. Hopefully a lot of our players go back to their World Junior experience and previous Olympics, and that's really kind of acclimated them for this year.
You know, Joe, speaking of the Olympics coming up in February in Sochi, Russia, how is that going to change the process of preparing and maybe making moves around the trade deadline?
Well, the league will have certain protocol with getting close to the deadline, what you can do with players going to the minors and such. It's for the most part, the players that are here in San Jose will probably stay here and have the Olympic break. You'll have a few in-between players who have been up and down that may go back to the minors. But, for the most part, the players that go to the Olympics are there. The other players will probably, get a little two-week rest and then a two-week break and recharge and come into a training camp. And that's really the key, I think, for coming out of the Olympics, too, is, setting it up almost like a training camp, just like a little mini camp like the beginning of the year.
If you're looking to, closer to the trade deadline, Joe, you're looking to acquire a player and he might be Olympic eligible, would you have to consider waiting until the Olympics are over so you don't acquire a player who gets injured playing for another team and then you never actually bear the fruits of his labor?
That's a good point, but I think there's so many quality players in the Olympics that you'd probably just take that risk because if they're there, it's a player that you probably would want for the playoffs, and there weren't many players injured last time in the Olympics. It is a risk that you need to consider and take, but so we will weigh it, but probably won't keep us from making any moves.
Final question, Joe. We hear a lot about certain owners, and whether it be Dolan in New York, Ed Snyder, even Mark Chipman here in Winnipeg. We don't hear a lot about the Sharks' ownership, except for the fact that they've done a great job in terms of who they have in charge, with you and Doug Wilson and other people. Can you talk about who the Sharks' ownership is, who you're dealing with, and what they are like to deal with?
It's his name is Hassel Plattner, and he's just a very supportive owner who is active with our team, very supportive of the players and the coaching and everybody else. Just a good owner.
Joe Will, San Jose Sharks Assistant General Manager, we thank you very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek. We'll let you go put on your salary cap guru hat. It sounds like Brad Stewart has just been suspended for 3 games.
Yeah, I just saw that.
We'll let you get to work on juggling the roster in that front. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Joe.
You too.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
That would be the first time a player has ever been suspended while we were talking to that team's assistant general manager on the air.
That would be.
Yeah. A new first year for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
If you keep talking, Drew, you might get suspended, so it might be the second time that'll happen.
Unfortunate. Who's the assistant general manager, though?
Remus.
Remus is the assistant general manager. We've got a whole organizational upheaval we need to go through in that case.
I'm third wheeling tonight. It's going to be a nice dinner. Me and Remus and his girlfriend.
Wait, are you actually?
We'll see.
You can watch the baseball game.
What about your girlfriend, though?
She likes baseball.
Since when? I've known her for a long time. In fact, since I was like one, and she's never liked baseball.
I got to tell you, more so than Remus enjoying this relationship, I got to say you seem to be enjoying this relationship.
Well, Drew, you're married, so you don't even have to get part of this conversation.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I just wanted to get to the no surrender line there by Bruce before continuing. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Again, if you just missed it, Brad Stewart suspended for 3 games for his hit on Rick Nash last night in the Sharks' dismantling of the New York Rangers. So if you want to take any bad news out of that game for the San Jose Sharks, that would be it. One final segment on this Wednesday evening, it's Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire. Let's start with Brian Burke on his comments on Sven Berchi. Calgary Flames head of hockey operations criticized Flames prospect Sven Berchi, saying that, and I quote, "All I've seen so far is flashes of brilliance. Flashes of brilliance are fine if you're working in the university, but they're not much good to people in an NHL building. I see this is a guy who's focusing on one area, that being scoring, and even then sporadically." Upon being confronted with Brian Burke's comments, Sven Berchi said that the comments are good for me. When a guy like that says things, you had better listen. Do you believe that public criticism like this is a good thing for a young player's long-term development?
I believe that if a guy goes to the public, he's already tried to go private and doesn't feel like that's the venue he can communicate to the player. Brian Burke's not an idiot.
By the way, sorry to interrupt you. Sven Berchi literally just scored a goal. I'm not joking. Remus?
It was literally, he celebrated.
What, Remus
right
the referee?
Now.
Well, no, I'm just so you guys weren't looking. So
yeah.
Sven Berchi just scored a goal. So
2-0 Calgary against Montreal on TSN.
So I guess
right
the answer is yes.
Yes, it worked. 100%.
So wait, so you talk to the GM of the Sharks, and then their player gets suspended.
Assistant GM.
Assistant GM. You talk about the, you know, Sven Berchi, and he scores a goal.
Michael Remus is going to be next mayor of Winnipeg.
Yeah, there we go.
I was going to say Drew Mandel's about to win the lottery tonight. I'll go with that one instead. How about that? Wow.
That is hilarious. Richie, what do we say after that?
Just move on to the next rapid
fire. Next rapid fire, that's right.
Any of our opinions at this point?
That's right.
No. It's obvious that Brian Burke, that was the right move for Brian Burke to do. Look how it's motivated Sven Berchi.
I mean, Sean Monahan has a goal and an assist already tonight. Calgary's up 2-0 on Montreal. But
good looking player.
I mean, let's pretending that that goal didn't happen and he didn't take that message to heart. It's kind of a difficult situation. Doesn't this, Richie, feel a little bit like Nazem Kadri a couple years ago?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, with Burke too. That's a good point. You know, Burke, talented player, top pick, first rounder. Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. So much talent on both of them. And you know what? I actually don't mind it at all. Clearly, if he thought that was an issue, that he could communicate privately, he probably would have already. So, I that's Calgary team already surprising me that they've been this competitive.
I'll tell you what, Bob Hart is getting everything out of them.
Absolutely.
They're playing hard. I mean, they don't have any talent for the most part, or not a lot of talent, but they're playing hard night in and night out. And
absolutely.
And they're not going to be the, at least so far, three games in, they're not the pushover we all expected them to be.
And give them credit. Now, it's one thing about when a team doesn't have matches, and when a team has no expectations, they buy in quicker than if they do.
Look at Ottawa with Paul MacLean last year. No Spezza. That's no right. Carlson. No Cowan.
Sure. They know they can't rest on their talent laurels because, well, they don't really have very many talent laurels, so they got to work hard.
We know Bob Hartley's a good coach, and again, it's three or four games here, so we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but early indications are this team is working their butts off and they're looking pretty good. Sean Monahan has looked terrific. He was picked 6th overall just this past June, and he's been terrific.
Ottawa 67's prospect. The Buffalo Sabres have named Thomas Vanek and Steve Ott co-team captains, with Vanek serving as captain at home games and Ott serving as captain for road games.
Yeah.
Give me an explanation about how having two separate captains for home and road games is a good idea.
You know what, Drew? I don't really know if it's a good idea. I don't like it. I don't think it's the worst idea ever. I think the weird idea is making two pending UFAs your captains. Because that means to me, unless you're signing these guys long term, which is possible, but if you don't, then you're going back again and you're naming a new captain. And don't you kind of want to name a guy captain who's going to be there for the foreseeable future? I don't know. I find that to be I find that to be more odd than the away and home.
And Richie, did that factor into Darcy Regier giving both of those guys C to kind of say, like, we do want you part of this part of the future?
That's a good point.
It might have been we can't get inside of his head. We know that he's been the GM for a long time. It's kind of a creative way to name your captains. I don't know if I like it or don't like it. I mean, Steve Ott is a master agitator, and he's a gritty guy, and Vanek is your top goal scorer and top point producer, but I don't really know. I mean, it's interesting, actually, that Ott is on the road because he's the guy that can go into an opposing team's building and kind of, you know, set the tone physically and agitate opponents. But I'm still on the fence whether I like it or not.
And you look at the roster, before Remus wants to get in here, but you look at the roster. Oh, there's no leaders on this team, though. So, I mean, like, these are the default, and I don't think these guys are inspiring confidence. Remo?
As far as having different captains for home and away, the Jets did this when they first came into the NHL.
I didn't know that.
I think the home captains were, I think one, they did home and road. One of them was like Thorburn and someone else, and one was Stewart and Buffon.
You're talking about assistants, though, Reed.
Alternate assistant captains.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, it's common
to
do.
I thought you meant like
it's,
back in 1979.
No, I mean, so did I. I thought he was talking about 1978.
No, sorry.
Also.
I mean 2 years ago.
Well, Remus is a lot younger than us. I mean, two years ago, he was a young teenager. So, no, but I mean, it's something
that's... 2 days ago.
I mean, some teams have five or six assistants, but this is kind of different. It's the first time that they've ever had two home and away captains. So.
It's funny because if you walk around the studio, Remus has two assistants all day.
Nice.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Sticking with the Buffalo Sabres, it was announced earlier today that Bell TV will begin to broadcast Buffalo Sabres games into the Southern Ontario Niagara region.
Falls in the forest.
The games will be available at no extra charge to viewers, whereas previously Sabres games in this region were only available via NHL Center Ice. Do you think the Buffalo Sabres can successfully broaden their fan base into this region, or will it ultimately be fruitless because these people will always be Leafs fans, even though they are geographically closer to Buffalo?
I think they can broaden it because you get young fans who are closer in proximity to Buffalo, and it's easier ticket to get, and they'll become Sabres fans. The problem is they have to watch Sabres games for the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's going to be a few years before they have a good team. They have prospects, Grigorenko and Rasmus Ristolainen and guys like this, but they're going to struggle to be a competitive team this year, not unlike the Calgary Flames, because as Richie mentioned, you've got the UFAs. Is Miller going to stay? But back to the TV thing, sure, it's great. I always like it when more people are going to be able to watch hockey, period, anywhere. So, yeah, maybe you'll see some more Sabre fans in that area of Ontario.
Reports from Russia have current CSKA Moscow general manager Sergei Fedorov returning to game action on Friday to play against Metallurg Magnitogorsk. It's unclear if this is a one-game experiment or if Fedorov will actually be playing full-time in the KHL. If you could choose one player from the mid-1990s Stanley Cup-winning Detroit Red Wings teams to return to NHL action, who would you choose and why?
I'm going to go first. I was a defense... What?
I anticipated you were going to go first. Don't worry.
Why?
It has to be Red Wings specific, this player?
Yeah.
You go first.
No, that's okay. You go first.
Yeah, Red Wings specific, but I like it. I thought it was just going to be a Russian-born player. Maybe we can put in Zamenhof, but if it's Detroit, I'm going to go with Konstantinov. And he was, unfortunately, the victim of a horrible limousine accident and never played after the Wings won that first cup in the mid-90s, but I loved Konstantinov, and he remains to this day a visible person in that organization, and I loved him because he was a smart defenseman. He was kind of like an old-school Russian defenseman, kind of back in the vein of another guy on the team, Richie Fetisov. So I'll go Konstantinov.
It doesn't have to be Russian, though, right?
Doesn't have to be Russian.
I thought you said Russian.
No. It doesn't have to be Russian. Any of the mid-90s.
Well, I'll still go Konstantinov.
Any of the mid-90s.
You can make it fun. You go Dino Cicerelli. You want to go Paul Eisenbart. You want to go Matthew Dandino. I mean,
there's any number of them Dandino. That you can go for.
Darren McCarty.
Martin LaPointe.
Joey Kosher.
All food team.
That's right. All food team.
I'm asking you.
I mean, there's so many to consider, dear Drew. What about like some of the really obscure defensemen that they had? They'd plug into those 5-6 slots.
Oh, you're talking Todd Gill.
What about what's his name? Jamie Puller. Was he late 90s or early 2000s?
Jamie McCowan.
Pusher, sorry. Pusher. Puller's my coworker.
You don't say
That's
Jamie
hilarious.
McCowan?
Jamie McCowan.
He played for the Wings.
That's right. Number 34, that mustache.
Larry Murphy.
Larry Murphy, the trade from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kevin Hodgson.
Wow, goalie from Winnipeg, I think, right?
Let's just start. Let's just randomly name players that played for the Red Wings.
I like last week when we did our Saturday show and we did Darren Shannon and Daryl Shannon's number.
Free agent goaltender Ilya Bryzgalov has agreed to attend training camp with the Las Vegas Wranglers of the ECHL.
Wow, how the mighty have fallen.
Don't bet on that one.
After posting a record of 19-17-3 and a goals against average of 2.79 last season with Philly, he was bought out of his contract.
Give me the best goalie at the rehab party there.
I still think Bryzgalov is better than either of the guys the Flyers have now.
Well, given the uncertainty of the backup goalie position of some teams, are you surprised that Bryzgalov has not yet received an NHL contract offer?
No, he's a distraction right now. That's the problem. He comes in, he's talking to the media about who knows what.
The universe.
Yeah, the universe or whatever it is. And you know, I mean, he's going to be, honestly, he's going to be... Why is he going to the ECHL in Vegas?
I think the Flyers should bring him back.
I guess if you're going
to sign him to another 9-year contract.
Yeah, I don't think they can.
Why?
If you buy out a guy, I don't think you're eligible to sign him for at least a year.
I think it's a year at least.
Yeah, maybe a year from now they'll bring him back, along with Roman Čechmánek and, you know, Robert Esch.
Robert Esch, good reference. There's been many others, too, those backups. Ray Emery. Oh, wait, he's back on the team.
Ron Hextall, bring him down from the assistant general manager
Snow.
Position. Yep.
Antero Nitamaki.
Antero Nitamaki.
87 Conn Smythe right there, Hextall.
Ryan Boucher still available.
Dominic Roussel.
They brought Boucher back, too. They bring them all back. Yeah. Dominic Roussel, Remus. He played in the Jets in the final year.
I know.
Remember Jim Hrivnik before
Roussel? I was about
Roussel?
To say Jim yeah. Hrivnik.
What number is Jim Hrivnik? I think it was 42, Hrivnik.
He was traded for Rick Tabarachi.
He was 31, Tabarachi.
Okay, if we're going to name out obscure hockey players, we have to throw out Hannu Järvenpää.
Last question. There's been a lot of discussion.
Remus loves that one.
There's been a lot of discussion about the NHL's new jersey tucking rule, which demands that players...
No problem for you. You tuck everything in.
Which demands... I'm not tucked tonight.
You're always tucked, though.
I'm untucked.
You're a
like
tucker.
Al Borland, you're tucked.
You're a tucker.
The rule demands that players not tuck their jerseys into their pants
so stupid.
And have their pads exposed. Besides needless nitpicking,
as long as it's only their pads.
Give me one reason why the NHL has decided that this is an issue that requires their attention.
Did you lift this question from last week's show plan?
This was in Saturday's show plan. We never got to it because we were stuck on escapades.
God forbid you think of new material.
Most of these questions were from Saturday's show plan that you just obviously didn't notice.
I think Drew should tuck off with this question. You like that?
That was very good. You're nothing if not clever.
No,
you know?
But I mean, there is no reason. Why did they do it? What's wrong with Alexander Ovechkin tucking his jersey? Or Toby Enstrom?
Yeah.
I mean, the greatest player of all time, Wayne Gretzky, tucked his jersey on. How many kids tucked their jersey, you know, when they were younger because of Gretzky? It's ridiculous. Let guys tuck their jersey. Peter Nedved was a tucker, too.
Peter Nedved. I mean, that was such waste.
Darcy Tucker wasn't a tucker.
Waste of potential. Peter Nedved.
I like that Darcy Tucker was not a tucker.
Peter Nedved, remember him?
Before we go...
He's still playing in like the Czech Republic.
I think he is. I'm pretty sure he is.
Sure, you can probably play there for the next 50 years at this point.
Remember his Team Canada 94 World Championship appearance?
Yeah.
Dual citizenship.
We're dating our young listenership. Remus is literally dating our young listenership.
Waiting for that.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Saw that coming from a mile away. Before we wrap up, a score update from the NHL. At the end of the first period, it's 1-1 between Chicago and St. Louis, a game that's been a lot talked about. The Blues are really using it as a benchmark to see how they can stand up against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Patrick Kane and Tarasenko on the board there.
That's right. And in Calgary, as we mentioned, Sean Monahan got the first goal for the Flames, and then just as we were talking about him, Sven Barchi got the second goal for the Calgary Flames.
Just really quickly, Drew, I know we're up against it here, but... What a great early race for the Calder Trophy. Nathan MacKinnon, Thomas Hertl, Sean Monahan. I mean, this is a great Barkov. I mean, this is looking to be a great year for the Calder race.
We will see if it stays that way about 79 games from now. That's it for NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Anthony Sanfilippo from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. And a big thank you to San Jose Sharks Assistant General Manager Joe Will. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on TSN1290.ca, on IllegalCurve.com, and on iTunes, where you can subscribe to this show and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Saturday afternoon, 12 noon, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We'll recap the Jets and the Stars, and we'll preview the Jets and the Devils. Next Wednesday, 6 p.m., it's NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Until then, for Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening, and we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.